What would you do if you found out your family had a dark, secret legacy? From Misha Green and J.J. Abrams comes HBO's newest series, Lovecraft Country, a genre-bending drama that blurs the line between science fiction and reality in 1950s Jim Crow America. Starring Jonathan Majors, Journey Smollett, Courtney B. Vance, and Michael Kenneth Williams, Lovecraft Country airs Sundays at 9 p.m. on HBO, and stream it on HBO Max.
You are listening to Let's Talk Tribe, the official Let's Go Tribe podcast.
Swung and lined to deep left field. It is gone! Hit well. Deep right. Batista's going to wave goodbye. Start the fireworks show.
This is Let's Talk Tribe, the official Let's Go Tribe podcast, episode 150. I am your host, Matt Lyons, and on this week's episode, talk about Tristan McKenzie, just everything about Tristan McKenzie. Talk about Nolan Jones and the potential of him maybe eventually playing with the Indians instead of sitting across the street watching Tristan McKenzie pitch. Talk about important stretch of games coming up for the Indians, and of course, we'll answer your question. Joining me for all that and more is none other Mr. Merritt Rolfing. Merritt, how are you doing?
I'm very well, Matthew. Thank you for having me once again on this podcast we do together.
Are you just my special guest that just never leaves? You're just a repeating
basically, yeah.
Special yeah. guest, yeah. Who are you again? I don't know.
We have a special guest today. It's Merritt Rolfing. Hey, well, pleasure to be here. Pleasure to be here.
You may have recognized his name. He's been here. Let me check every single episode.
He's one of our better hosts, better guests. He's here from time to time. He was able to make it again this week. So welcome back.
We can't count the lead. He just keeps coming.
Please, please help us call the cops or something. He took our phones.
We keep starting the Zencaster. He just pops up every time. We can't get him out. I don't know how to moderate this. Anyway, yeah. Merritt, there's been some baseball. There's arguably one of the most exciting debuts in a while happened, Tristan McKenzie. Also, a bunch of just absolute garbage happened with the offense. But we'll start with, of course, the most important thing of what to talk about.
Let's get it.
When I find the button. Meatballs, Merritt. It's time to talk about some interesting things that happened over the last week. Serve up some meatballs and some little statistical tidbits. I'll let you go first with yours this week, so... What do you got for us, Merritt?
James Karinchak.
Yes.
Is what I wanted to talk about. Whew, what a psychopath.
The human meatball, as it were.
I know that he's had some questionable comments on Twitter, but, you know, whatever. On the field, he's a delight. And just a couple of thoughts here. He was absolutely, once again, lights out this whole past week. Since last we talked, I think he pitched something like five innings, something like that, struck out nine. In a little run, you know, that old chestnut. According to StatCast now, he is in the 100th percentile in expected ERA, expected batting average, expected slugging, and in strikeout percentage. That is literally the best in baseball, and then merely 99th percentile in expected weighted on base average. What else? Barrel percentage, he's 90th percentile. Whiff rate, 97th percentile. He's so goddamn good. And it's a total blast to see. And what do we think of when we think of James Karinchak, Matt? Besides the, you know, the madness.
Fastball, I was just saying, right? Being psychotic, but yeah, the fastball, yeah, and the curveball.
The fastball, yeah. Right.
The 1-2, yeah.
He is actually, however, he is ever so close to doing something that since 2002, only 19 pitchers that I could count, 19 relief pitchers, because I didn't even look at starters. I just assumed they didn't do it. The Indians have had 196 different relief pitchers since 2002 when we started tracking pitches with whatever that was, Pitch Tracker or something like that, so we could actually know what they're throwing. 196 pitchers, only 19 of them have thrown less than 50% fastballs. It includes such names as Rafael Perez literally every year of his career, Andrew Miller in 2017, Cam Hill this year, Matt Miller, don't know who that is, but he pitched in 04. Brad Hand last year threw a fastball 45.9% of the time. James Karinchak throws one of the best fastballs I've seen out of the Indians bullpen. I mean, probably since Andrew Miller, but before that, I'm not really sure. It's hard to tell. And he's only throwing at 50.7% of the time because his curveball is, I mean, you know, we've heard time again, it's basically an 80 grade curveball. It's the best curveball you could possibly have, which, I mean, I can get into the whole thing about how, according to its movement, it is actually suboptimal, but I disagree because I've seen it kill people. So that's what I wanted to mention was he is ever so close, one or two games even, from being a curveball first pitcher. For a guy who can throw a fastball through a brick wall, I just think that's really neat. It shows, I don't know if it shows a level of maturity in terms of trusting not just the fastball or just the fact that he knows how good he is. I mean, I wouldn't call that maturity so much as some sort of, you know, cockiness or, you know, assuredness. So anyway, I just thought it was really neat. You know, again, 19 people have done it since 2002. And if you take out Rafael Perez, you're down to like 16 people. So
yeah, I think part of it has to be that wonky ass delivery, right? The way that he goes like up over his, over the top, that has to like be somehow hiding the curveball better than,
well, it's just, it's,
or it just makes it look weird as it's coming out that I'm used to. I don't know what it is. It's just such a weird delivery and it works so well. Cause like you said, it's not,
it's just such insane a hard
movement.
Yeah. Like, it's not like the big looping curveball so much. Like when Zach Greinke throws one of those like 60 mile an hour curveballs, or it's just kind of, it's borderline an Ephus pitch basically. Like this is, it seems like it's just coming in. Just, it's just like, you know, they always describe it as falling off the table. Like literally it just goes shoomp. Like it just grabs something in the air and just runs straight towards the ground at like the 57 foot mark or something like that. So I don't know what makes it work. It works, and he throws it for strikes constantly, and he is, you know, incredible. Again, I think he has a chance to become the best, the Indians' best relief pitcher, at worst, the Indians' second best relief pitcher of the last decade. And that's pretty good, because Andrew Miller was absolutely savage in 2016 and 2017.
I think in longevity, anyway, he's going to probably top Miller unless something tragic happens. Definitely. But as long as he's as good as he looks and he does it for his whole tenure in Cleveland, I mean, he's, I mean, how far do you have to go back? He's one of the best Indians relievers in a long, long time if he's like this forever. But
that, because that's the thing. Like, pre Miller, basically, you had the bullpen mafia, which were fine. Before that, it was, ugh.
You know, that bullpen mafia, man, when you look back on it, they weren't really like,
they were not worth good.
Getting their own moniker over.
No, not at all. I mean, they seem like good, cool enough guys, I guess. But I mean, and then before that, it was like the, I liked Rafael Betancourt and Rafael Perez, and Joe Borowski was an absolute excitement every moment he was on the mound. Before that, though, again, like Jose Mesa was a great reliever, but it's just, yeah, you have to go back quite a ways, and you know, you hit a point where it's just relief pitchers at a certain point were not what they are today. Also, interestingly, you know, this is the first year ever across baseball we're seeing a fastball less than 50% of the time out of the average pitcher's hand. I just thought that was interesting as well. And Karinchak is, for a guy who throws something that is considerably not an average fastball, is, you know, trending that way very, very quickly. So. There you go. Yeah. Meatballs, baby.
So mine is just, I wanted to use it as an old tip of the cap, an old howdy do you to Jose Ramirez for not putting us through another half season slump, hopefully. Because he got off to a really hot start. He was one of the few batters who looked great to start the season. And then, of course, over the last week or so, he's been terrible. He was 0 for 21 at one point in the middle of Saturday's game. He eventually did get a hit. He took a changeup at the bottom of the zone and hit it for a weak single. It was only like 85 miles an hour, but whatever. He did it. He hit it. He finally broke out of the slump. That followed a ground ball and a strikeout earlier in the game. And then on Sunday, he got two more hits. So I'm hoping, I'm using my meatball to plead for Jose Ramirez to please don't be another slump. I don't want to have another half season of Jose bad. But he's looked good at the start of the season. He's looked at least good in the last couple of games. So maybe we're seeing him back now. But it was just nice seeing him actually get a hit on a changeup, which he usually doesn't hit very well. And just in general, he looks like a different sort of hitter this year. He's walking a ton more than he usually does. He's not, he's striking out a lot more too, but he looks like a different hitter this year. And if he can make it work and actually hit the baseball and hit changeups like he did, to break out of that slump, that'll be nice. But just a quick note that Jose Ramirez is hitting the ball again after not doing it for so long, because baseball is bad when Jose Ramirez is bad, especially with those dreadlocks. He needs to be hitting and have his helmet flying off and having those majestic things flopping out of the air. So it's good to see Jose Ramirez hit.
I mean, honestly, I was trying to find something to talk about with Jose Ramirez for my own meatball. Couldn't find one. Apparently he's not striking out all that much in the grand scheme of things. If I'm understanding this correctly, his strikeout percentage is in the 71st percentile, according to StatCast and Baseball Savant, which means it's not, you know, not what it once was. He had a top five strikeout rate back in, top 5% strikeout rate back in like 2016, 2017, 2018. It was like, you know, 10 or 11%, but he's striking out less than 20%. I think people just like striking out a tremendous amount more this year, like across the board, that we haven't even really noticed it. So I don't know.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I mean, it is just nice to see him hitting, like you said, because They have like, yeah, the average strike, league average strikeout right now is 23.4% compared to last year when it was, I don't know, lower than that, 21 points. So it's gone up like 3 points. So his trending up is in the same, you know, vein as everyone else, because, you know, people are just throwing more relief pitches and stuff like that. I think he's still himself within the construct of the league in terms of the strikeouts and the whiffs, because he still makes a tremendous amount of contact. He's just not hitting the ball as hard as I think he used to, quite as often.
He's also not whiffing a ton either. It's not like he's – it is lower than before, but like his strikeout rate is a lot worse than his whiff rate is. And part of that, he's just watching more pitches in general. Like his swing rate in the zone is lower than it ever has been, which is kind of interesting. That could also be just part of – the fact that it's a weird season and he didn't get to see a lot of pitching, so he's just watching more pitches early on. But
you mentioned his walking too. I mean, it's second highest rate of his entire career, 13.2%, which is, you know, borderline an elite number.
I mean, he's just seeing more pitches every at bat.
He's turning into another different type of batter. I've already done
morphs
Michael
every year. Yeah,
I've done Michael Brantley already. That was boring. And then I turned into, I don't know, I guess a tiny Jim Thome for a year or something like that. Just pulling a lot of
He does do that, doesn't he? He was exactly Michael Brantley for a year.
Literally, like 2016, he was literally Michael Brantley for stat line. And then this year, he's just like, I'm going to be Carlos Santana now. I'm going to walk all the time. We're like, just pick one, man. You're driving us mad. Come on.
Yeah, I wonder how conscious that is. I think part of it is he's just adjusting to himself as he stays in the league more, but it's cool. Yeah, that's a really good trajectory there too. You got it's Brantley, Thome, and to Carlos Santana is basically what he's doing.
He's just easing his way through the various Indian hitters we've all known and loved through the years. And I'm okay with that. You know what? As long as it keeps him viable and an impactful offensive player, which he has been so far. So
yeah, there you go. So somebody who doesn't quite, I don't know if he compares to anybody, it's just because of he's such a unique physical. Just to look at the kid, Tristan McKenzie, he made his debut on Saturday against the Tigers. He looked great, 10 strikeouts. The first Indians rookie to do that in the debut since Louis Tiant, since like 1960. So he's in his rare company. He looked great from the start, pretty much. I think a better team might have ended up hitting him a little harder than Tigers did. I saw there was a few changeups that were left over. Although part of that is just maybe, I mean, between the fact that he's hitting 95, 96 now with his extension, who knows how fast it actually looks to the batters, and they're just whiffing on it. But there were a couple fastballs that weren't located well. That's his biggest strength is locating that fastball. So if he can work up to that, he's going to look even better. But we saw some of the curveball. We saw the changeup and slider that he's been working on. The changeup once was located pretty bad and got crushed by his old teammate, Willie Castro. And one of the other things I like that we saw from him is his quote-unquote rising fastball. It's the, you know, the mythical thing that looks like instead of following gravity, the balls just go up when they're thrown. And part of that is he has such a high release point because of how tall he is and how long his arms are. And he's put such a big spin rate on his fastball that you could see it in some of the Pitching Ninja GIFs. It looks like his fastball just goes, it's either a dart or it looks like it goes up, which is ridiculous. But yeah, so I would assume you're impressed by McKenzie's debut. It was horrible.
Unimpressed. Oh, what's this garbage? Man, that was a lot of fun because I know we talked about it a few times where it's just the Indians pull these pitchers out of their ass time and time again. I mean, they've had three of them in the rotation at one point this year. Even Mike Clevinger, to a degree, was a guy who was just like out of nowhere. You know, obviously before them, it was Corey Kluber, I think, is the perfect example of the most out of your ass pulling of an ace you could possibly imagine.
Yeah.
McKenzie was supposed to be good, is the thing. Wasn't he a first round pick?
Yeah, he was a compensatory pick, so he was like the sandwich pick.
Okay, so he was like a 1.5.
It's technically a first rounder, yeah, but it was very, very late first
round. But either way, like I've talked about this, Pat. I'm not great at paying attention to prospects. I don't have the mental capacity to pay attention to all that. I know of who is good. I got caught out the other night. I was watching Joe Adell's debut for the Angels like a week or so ago, and I was like, oh, who's this guy? Number 2 overall prospect in baseball. Like, yeah, he seems pretty good.
He might be all right, yeah.
But like, you know, again, this is a guy who I've been paying attention to since he was drafted in 2015. Wondering about when he's going to turn up, seeing these guys drafted after him, showing up before him, who were much less heralded, much less quote-unquote projectable, just guys who were whoever's and who turned into Shane Bieber and you know, Aaron Civale and on and on and on. McKenzie was supposed to be good, and then he was way better than I thought he was going to be. I tweeted about it yesterday. He's hitting 96 at the bottom of the zone. It's something we haven't really seen. I mean, since Danny Salazar, technically, but I don't think Danny Salazar was pounding the bottom of the zone quite as easily and was in the zone. Maybe I'm just misremembering when Danny Salazar was truly at his best, which was, you know, a short period of time, but it was truly amazing. I loved everything I saw out of Tristan McKenzie. His curveball had a wonderful bite. His changeup had incredible fade. His slider, whatever. I wish he wouldn't throw it quite so much. It seemed fine.
He's got to get something for a third pitch because he has the fastball, curveball. The changeup looked pretty good a couple times, and the slider was.
I mean, he only threw, what, 7 of them. So it wasn't like he was like, you know, like. But no, I mean, goddamn, man. I mean, if the thing is, and you mentioned it before, just with his extension and everything like that, he is. And if he can maintain this level of control and command of pitches, he might be like the pinnacle of the Indians' pitching development that we've seen in the last several years. Because he has, in addition to all that kind of makeup stuff, it's not makeup stuff, it's like the repeatable delivery, all the things that make Shane Bieber so good. He also has arms that are like fucking Stretch Armstrong. So he just has that weird perceived velocity thing going on where it looks like it's coming at you from 50 feet away and it's on you before you can even blink. So. I'll never forget, it was the pitcher for the Royals, right? Tall, gangly, white guy.
Yeah, he's like 6'7 or 6'8.
Yeah, exactly. He's only threw like 89, but like because he was just this big, long mess of a person, it popped up on you, and like that was the reason that like the Royals chased after him, that's why he helped them win a World Series in 2015, because he was just it was so hard to understand what's coming at you, because it looks like it's 89, but it was coming at you, like, and to you, it appeared 95, you know, so... If he's throwing 96 on the gun, does it seem like it's 100? Like, does it seem like it's 105 to or whatever? So I don't know. I mean, I haven't seen anything. I mean, I know that there's various sites who can calculate this thing for you, but that's just one of those things where when you're in the box, you can't tell, right? Between the spin rate and between this and that other thing, and then just the physical gifts that he has that make him such an impactful pitcher. Just being up on the mound, because he's bigger than everyone in terms of length. Like, he's taller than everyone else in the rotation. He's longer than just goddamn. His arms are just huge.
Yeah. Ashley Whitgren, Nick Whitgren's wife, posted a series of pictures with him. There's one where they measured out his arms. There's one where he was standing in a regular doorway, touching the floor and touching the top of the doorway. Like, if you can imagine that, he's turned sideways and his arms
are
like
that long.
He's
like a 7.5-foot wingspan or something like that.
Yeah,
like,
it's got to be at least like 80 inches.
That's just crazy. And so like that's why what I mean when I just seeing the way he pitched, the way he seemed very composed there. Again, you mentioned it. He's not quite pitching against, you know, the Astros or something like that. They don't, you know, they're not a great offensive team.
But also like that same lineup just hit Cookie today. So,
I mean, exactly. So yeah, that's the thing. Possible. I mean, the night before they'd hung 10 runs and then on Sunday, they scored another 7 or 8 or whatever it was. So it's not like they weren't, it's not like they're terrible. I'd like to see him get the start on, what would it be, Wednesday, I think, because they're talking about him getting another start. I'd prefer at this point, the games matter so much. I don't think it's a smart move to start Pluko. I'd prefer to see McKenzie because, you know,
what would you do if you found out your family had a dark, secret legacy? From Misha Green and J.J. Abrams comes HBO's newest series, Lovecraft Country. This genre-bending drama, which blurs the lines between science fiction and reality, follows a young man named Atticus, who, along with his friend Letitia and Uncle George, goes on a journey across 1950s Jim Crow America to find his missing father. The search and rescue mission turns into a struggle to survive as they try to overcome the terrors of white America and otherworldly Lovecraftian monsters. Along the way, they forge their own paths to reclaim their power and find their true selves. Lovecraft Country explores the themes of family, race, and history, taking viewers to unexpected new places in time or space in each episode. Starring Jonathan Majors, Journey Smollett, Courtney B. Vance, and Michael Kenneth Williams, Lovecraft Country airs Sundays at 9 p.m. on HBO and stream it on HBO Max. And listen to the Lovecraft Country Companion Podcast, hosted by Shannon Houston and Ashley C. Ford, available on all major podcast platforms.
Yeah, McKenzie gets one guaranteed, Sandy already said, but they're deciding who's going to get the other one, whether it's Plutko or somebody else. I would assume the gap there is whether they decide to reinstate Plesac or Clevinger, whoever, or not reinstate at this point, but bring it back up. And it's almost, I know it's repetitive at this point, but McKenzie's tunneling was just ridiculous in that game too. Like another Pitching Ninja GIF was showing the difference between his fastball and curveball, and it is it's by far like the closest I've ever seen to the mound before they split. And the pitches just look like one ball, and then there's suddenly two on like several feet away on the plate. And I think a few weeks ago, I tried to remember somebody's name who was the pitching coordinator in the minor. It was Ruben Niebla, who was he was the minor league pitching coordinator, and now he's the assistant pitching coach, which I don't think is a coincidence that he was overseeing the minors when all these, like you mentioned, these just random pitches were coming up and being so good. Like Mike Clevenger was traded for a reliever. Corey Kluber was, I don't even know anymore, but it was just these guys they just got and turned into these superstars. And I would assume Ruben had a big part of that. Now he's the assistant pitching coach, and we're seeing these guys come up and they're pitching. Like Aaron Civale is well above what we thought he would be. Shane Bieber is well above what we thought he would be. I think Ruben deserves a ton of credit for helping these guys first when they're developing and now when they're in the majors. Because every pitcher just looks so prepared when they come out. I mean, Tristan McKenzie, he's 23 years old. He's got to be nervous. But he didn't look it at all. He just looked like he was prepared. He knew what to pitch.
All these guys are so young. Like we forget how young. Yeah. Shane Bieber's like 23, 24. And like all these guys are like really way. And they just, there's a level of composure and just, you know. Oh, incidentally, you just said some relievers is what brought back from Mike Clevenger. It was Vinny Pastano. Come on now. you made me have to look up where.
I knew it was Vinny Pastano, but I mean, I'm just saying it's a reliever. Like they got a potential Cy Young candidate for a reliever. I don't care who it is. It's
well, it was Ryan.
I love Vinny Pastano, back, but it's still. There it is. Ryan Ludwig. Corey Kluber.
Corey Kluber. So, you know.
Yeah. No, I think part of the stoicism is some of it's like Savali is just the way he is. He's the most boring human being in the world.
God damn. Does he exist?
There you go. It's another one of those. Part is just they're just so prepared. Tristan McKenzie, I mean, he's an excitable kid by the scenes, but I didn't see a single person who wished anything but the best of luck. And like people came out of nowhere just saying they've interacted with him and it's such a great kid he is. And it was cool that he's getting his debut, but it's just all. Everybody's just so prepared. It's fun to watch.
Oh, exactly. And like, it's just, I don't know. And again, we don't know if we should be overreacting or underreacting or properly reacting, because again, it was still just the Tigers and they're really bad offensively, man. But they still did hit other major league pitchers. They've done it a few times this year and they're not, you know, they've still won 10 games now, 11 games after today. So, you know, it's not cute going up against the worst offense in baseball history. It wasn't like the 2010 or 2011 Astros or something like that. It was a team has some, you know, his first strikeout was Miguel Cabrera. I mean, Miguel Cabrera is the shadow of his former self, but and I'm not even saying I'm worried about this, but it's just all his strikeouts, I think, came on his fastball, which is like, you know, it'd be nice to see his secondary stuff get the job done, but he threw a lot of them. So he threw like 60% of the time. So, you know,
it was like 90 or it was 9 out of 10 were strikeouts on the fastball, which I mean, part of it is just, yeah, that's just his strength. He locates it so well. Like we knew, like coming out, he was going to be able to locate that. He'd have a big curveball, and the biggest things as far as I was looking for anyway to see if we can how overreacting we can be is if he could get velocity, which good lord he did. It was at least 96. It dipped a little bit, so I mean there was some adrenaline there. At the beginning it was up like almost 97, and at the end it was almost 97. So I think realistically he's more like 94, 95, which is still amazing considering his extension.
Averaged 94 and a half, minimum was 92 and a quarter or whatever. So it's just, I think seeing guy, I don't know. I know I'm already overreacting and I know it's going to take a year or two for him to really figure it out, as it were. No,
retire his jersey right now.
But, you know, just because, and I'm just like, I'm thinking back to Shane Bieber. McKenzie has way more room for error because he is bigger, throws harder, and he has the physical gifts that, purely that Shane Bieber does not, but he's not going to be a guy who has 5-6 different pitches that can all strike you out guy yet. The thing is, he can get there. And the Indians have, you mentioned already with the Ruben Niebla guy, they have a structure around him. It goes beyond him. Like, you know, we all talk about Mickey Callaway being the guy unlocking all of this. He left and it kept on happening. If anything, it got even better.
I think we were just wrong about Mickey Callaway doing much of anything, especially seeing him on the Mets. I think we overvalued him quite a bit.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, this is not any one man, right? Like, it helps to have a consistent voice for a generation of pitchers or what have you, but it's organizational. Their ability to continue to do this is truly amazing. And so they can lose one or two people, but as long as they continue to have an organizational drive to find and develop a certain type of pitcher that they know is going to be effective, they're going to keep on doing it. And I don't see it. You know, I mean, people are like, oh, well, you know, I saw someone comment on Twitter today that like, it's all going to fall apart for them because they won't be able to have any offense. And so then they're going to lose out on a generation of pitchers. And like, to this point, Matt, I have no problem saying this is going to continue. I mean, it probably won't, but I don't see any reason why organizationally they can't continue to produce this kind of pitching. I could have said that back in the early to mid-90s, obviously, with the bats. It is harder to find a bat. I am firm in believing that it's harder to develop a hitter than it is a pitcher. We've been over this several times, I know, but I think the Indians have figured something out here, at least something. And then they can start turning this into other things that, like they've tried, like they have so far with Reyes and others. So, you know.
Yeah, I think
if you're good at the most important thing in the game, you can turn that into the other parts of the game. So, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think this is probably the end of, like, if there's more pitchers that come out and are this good, they're going to be bigger surprises than we've seen. I think Tristan McKenzie was pretty much the end of, I mean, it was that 2015-2016 area where they drafted, I mean, it was Plesac, Savali, and Bieber, and then McKenzie was in 2015. I think at this point, it'll be like, if Logan Allen turns into something great or Scott Moss, they can develop him. I don't think there's anybody coming up really, unless they're just more big surprises, which at this point, I mean, there's no reason to doubt them anymore. Like you can believe that they're going to make anybody into a great starting pitcher. That's,
let me ask you this. And like, I'm not saying you're right or wrong or if I'm overreacting, you're underreacting. Like, who's to say that Tanner Burns won't turn into something? Like, we're talking about guys who like, the fact of the matter is, what made 2015-2016 so special? They drafted a bunch of guys from different parts of the country who had never met each other, who had a couple of similar attributes, I suppose, but who no one had ever imagined, except for in McKenzie's case, had ever projected them as being anything more than maybe a good back-end starter. And to be honest with you, even watching Shane Bieber, I thought he'd be a pretty good, like a number three kind of a guy. I thought he'd be better than people were giving credit for because his control was so absurd even coming in. Same thing with, I don't know, I'm waffling on Savali lately, but just because he leaves the ball up so much. But, you know, I'm still on him. So we'll figure that one out. But like I said, like there's all these, I'm just going through there. Like, will Luis Oviedo be good? I don't know. I just clicked on the guy before. No, not him. Daniel Espino. He throws 97 miles an hour. He might just be a reliever. I don't know. Maybe he won't be. Maybe they'll figure out how to fix his long arm action. But yeah, I don't know. You know, like
I feel like you just throw a dart at some point and it'll get somebody who's probably going to develop.
They keep on doing it. So why should I believe that that's it. We got these four guys. We can't go any further than this. We don't know anything else. We blew it all on these guys. So.
Yeah, and it's interesting that also they weren't able to do it with Adam Plutko because he's also a guy that has been here. He was through the system with Ruben. He's with him in the majors now. Whatever system they have, Plutko has gone through all of it, presumably, and it didn't work out for him. So I don't know. There's something obviously he can't do with every single pitcher, but also like Julian Merriweather, he just debuted for the Blue Jays finally, and I think he had a pretty good outing. He was the one the Indians traded for Josh Donaldson, Cleveland Indians legend Josh Donaldson, a couple years ago, but yeah, right. But Merriweather was another one where I think if he stayed with the Indians, we'd be seeing another. If he didn't get banned for steroids, he'd be in the majors now and probably another great starting pitcher for the Indians. It's just an endless stream. I think we're going to look back at the streak of and pitchers. You go all the way back to when Corey Kluber debuted and got his first Cy Young. Like this streak of pitchers is ridiculous, and it's going to be one of those things that it's just going to be historic how good they've been over this period of time. And looking at the starting pitching now, it's almost like we can look back at Bauer, Carrasco, and Kluber and just laugh at ourselves. You thought they were good. You didn't have Bieber, Clevenger, Plesac, Savali, Tristan McKenzie. Like that was nothing. Three ace pitchers, that's all you had? Now you have like seven.
Like I'm on the Indians top prospects thing. I just clicked on one guy who's like 6'6". So like he creates an incredible angle. Sam Henches. Like, I don't know, his control. So it's like his 6'8" frame and high three-quarter delivery creates steep downhill plane. So I was like, who's this gigantic man? Let's get him going. More huge pitchers.
He's obviously another Cy Young candidate in a couple of years, so who knows?
Let's pop him out. Screw it. You know, he's supposed to debut next year. I mean, they're going to have to trade someone off for a bat soon. So there you go. Keep him moving.
Yeah, I still think – I will come to that later, but I don't think I'm going to trade all the young guys. But so another thing about that his game was fun was the fact that obviously he couldn't be there in person. Nobody could technically, but Nolan Jones, another top prospect who's been with McKenzie in Eastlake at the alternate training site. He watched the game from across the street up in the parking garage, and the Indians managed to get a picture of him just sitting up there watching. I thought that was cool. Like I said, everybody was so excited for McKenzie, including, I would assume, all his Eastlake teammates down there. Nolan Jones, who, good Lord, I hope is here eventually. That's the next thing to come to here, is the fact that the offense has been so bad, and Nolan Jones, I mean, obviously we haven't seen him this year, but just like McKenzie, we haven't. But Jones has been just incredible at every level. I don't know how much more you can possibly wait before you just give him a shot. I mean, they did it with Daniel Johnson. It didn't work out so far. I still wish they would give him more of a shot. But I think Nolan Jones, at some point, if he's a third baseman, just put him at DH. Who cares? Cesar Hernandez is really good, so you can keep him that second, and you don't want to move Jose yet. But it's obvious Nolan Jones is going to be the third baseman eventually, and Jose will be second. So just let him DH, put Franmil in the outfield, have a terrible outfield. I don't even care. Hit. You have great pitchers. You don't need an outstanding outfield, I don't think. You can survive with Franmil and Domingo, and just pray to God whoever's in center field can run really fast and just hit the ball, because that's what you need now more than anything. I think I would be surprised if we don't see Nolan Jones at some point this year, especially if this continues the way it is, just because they need to hit. They have these legendary pitchers that they're, like you said, they can do the hardest part of the game really well, but they also need to hit the damn ball. And I think Nolan Jones, I mean, if you look at his minor league numbers, he's never struggled at any single level.
Oh, no, he's got stupid numbers, yeah.
Yeah, we would have seen him in AAA this year, finally, and he probably would have debuted, but I want him to come up at this point, unless something terrible has gone wrong and he's like, he just can't hit anything right now, and he falls over on his way to first base every time, and nobody can figure out why. I want him up and on the Indians as soon as possible.
I mean, it's guys like this too that I think really they were bound to suffer from this whole stupid thing, because they don't have that first couple of months to figure it out in AAA to make the next big leap. I mean, that's AAA isn't always the hardest division. I mean, it depends on various teams. Like it's supposed to be harder, but sometimes it's not. Sometimes it is. Sometimes it's just used like a rehab league.
Yeah, but usually it's like AA is the hardest, and he crushed
right.
It.
No, exactly. Yeah. So it was going to be something. It was going to be guys like this who were going to suffer the most because they couldn't get that final polish, I guess. I mean, whether or not that was really a thing that was going to happen, but I mean, again, he's always hit. He's 22 now, so like it's getting to a point where he should probably be debuting soon. And yeah, you're right. I guess play him at DH and just get him some at bats, but. Like you mentioned with Johnson, like these guys need more than just a few at bats a week. They need to be able to get in the groove and figure it out and get comfortable. We saw them kind of try with Bobby Bradley, but even that didn't feel like they gave it the real try. So I don't know. The Indians being stuck in this constant situation where they're kind of pseudo contending constantly just because of that pitching, it's like it's almost like you get antsy when young prospects don't perform immediately, like guys like Lindor did, or even Ramirez didn't really perform immediately, and he wasn't a big prospect anyway. So, I'd love to see him up.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like, if they weren't always – if the pitching staff wasn't always carrying them to the expectation that they need to win, like, would these guys have played long enough to get into a groove and actually – like, would Bobby Bradley be hitting 7,000 home runs right now? Would
– like, that's the thing. Like, their floor at this point is, like, 87 wins. Like, they just – they can't do worse than that because they're always only allowing, like, 3 or 4 runs a game.
Yeah, but then there's always this concern that they have to have these veteran guys who can fill the gap, because you don't want to let the prospects develop and waste your pitching staff or whatever, but let the damn guys hit.
Yeah, no, so exactly. So, like, I don't know. Again, I think we saw a decent amount of someone like Bobby Bradley.
Yeah.
He loved his swing. He's bad. But again, like, Jones walks constantly. He strikes out. He struck out a lot last year, too. I think he struck out like 200 times or something like that. Maybe, that might be 148 times last year. So that's a lot of strikeouts between single and double A. Yeah. But even with that, like we don't care about strikeouts anymore. Like the fact of the matter is, like, you go look at like Luis Robert's numbers. His strikeout rate is absurd. What's his name over in the Padres? Goddamn. How can I not remember his name? It was Luis Robert's name. Fuck.
Are you thinking of Fernando Tatis?
Fernando Tatis Jr., yeah. He strikes out constantly. So I should remember, because all these White Sox people I follow on Twitter for whatever reason, they're pissed still about the James Shields trade. So I don't know. Like, do we care about it anymore? I don't think so. Maybe we're just going to have to wait another year because by another year, I need, what, like 40 games? Because I'd like it if they would re-sign Cesar Hernandez. I think he's been a true delight at second base. He's been fantastic in every phase of the game. Just a total change of pace from Jason Kipnis. But if it has to be done, I think I'd prefer, yeah, the Ramirez to second and then Jones to third, just full time, and just stick with it. You know what I mean? Like, the offense has been the toilet for 2 years anyway. Just stick with it. Who cares?
It's not like you're going to get worse. Just give somebody else a shot.
I mean, put him there, put him in left field. I don't know, because Domingo Santana's only here for a year anyway. So maybe both those guys are just kind of papering it over until a couple of these guys they think are ready to go. Maybe. I don't know. I mean, MLB.com suggests that 4 or 5 of these guys are MLB ready. George Valera apparently is MLB ready. So I don't know if they're going to put him in there. He's an outfielder. They're all outfielders. God damn, they're all just speedy outfielders.
Do they consider George Valera MLB ready already?
Holy well, God, according to this, I don't know. Apparently it says level MLB. So maybe they just, that means he's played. I don't know what any of this means.
Oh, everybody's MLB now because they're on the 40-man roster.
Oh, right.
So everybody's stuck there. Yeah, I was going to say George Valera's like 19 and they're just shooting him up there.
Bullshit. I was tricked again by different columns.
I don't get why they have to do that. I get technically they're MLB, but shut up. They're, you know where they are.
Right.
Just probably where they're supposed to be.
But, you know, again, even guys like Yu Chang, like, I think he deserves more time. It's just, let him, you know, I mean, who is it over at Everybody Hates Cleveland? You know, again, let DJ spin. Let him play. Just get him out there every single day. Who cares? Like, I feel the same way about Bradley Zimmer. Like, that motherfucker has put so much work into overhauling his entire self. Like,
I don't know if I feel that way about Bradley Zimmer anymore.
I mean, whatever. I think it's too hard to make a firm decision on him because he's played like 9 games the last 3 years between injury and just not getting a chance to consistently play. And you're right. Eventually, like, the talent will out. You know, it worked with Jose Ramirez. He hit a point where obviously, what's his name got hurt, Brantley. So they just had to stuff someone in there, and it turned out it was just Michael Brantley. Tiny, but talent will out itself eventually. It's just I was watching the Rays today and Yandy Diaz was up and I was just getting mad for a few minutes. I was like, damn. And he had a beautiful opposite field single that advanced a guy from first to third. I was like,
probably hit 110 miles an hour.
And then I looked at his stats. I was like, god damn, dude, like he's
God, he's walking more than he strikes out, Merritt. I hate
it. He's got like a 118 on OPS plus. Like, he would be the second best hitter on the Indians at worst right now. Yeah. And I'm just like, damn. And we saw it the whole time. So I don't know.
Was it a mistake? Like,
I don't know. I've lost my train of thought because Yandy Diaz pissed me off again. He didn't.
Well, I was actually looking up because I think if there is anything against Nolan Jones, is that these guys that usually have. That rely on their eye at the plate as their biggest thing coming up. It doesn't always translate to the major, so I wanted to look at Yandy Diaz, but then it translated for Yandy Diaz because that was one of the biggest things with him is that he just walked a ton. And usually if you only do that in the minors, it isn't always great. But with Yandy, we found out that he just had a bad launch angle. He was actually hitting the shit out of the ball in the minors, but we just couldn't measure it. But I mean, we don't know that with Nolan Jones. I'd assume the Indians do with whatever measurements they have, but yeah, I don't know. Like, just walking doesn't always translate well. And the fact that he strikes out a lot, that's of course, I mean, you could be Bobby Bradley and strike out too much when it comes up, but I still don't
think has a better glove, I think, too, than Diaz did. That was always the issue, was Diaz just would have a hard time sticking at third. And then it's hard to talk yourself into, I mean, I don't know why it's hard to talk yourself into this at this point, because it doesn't matter. Having a DH who doesn't hit for a lot of power, like, who cares? Like, he's on base 40% of the time. So, long story short, you're right. I mean, at this point, it's hard. The way the offense is really craters, even having an opportunity to score runs after about, the sixth guy in the lineup. And the fact that 2 of those 6 are going to be gone next year, there's no reason to think that Nolan Jones shouldn't be up in 2021. 2020.
Sometime in there, yeah. Yeah, and then so whether Nolan Jones is here or not,
that's coming up for the Indians. Stats for.
God no.
damn it, he's playing third too. This is bullshit.
He doesn't want to do it though, Merritt. That's the problem. He doesn't want to play.
He's a 132 OPS plus. Come on, yeah, man. It's ridiculous. Jesus Christ.
So looking at the wider view for the Indians, right now they're 17 and 11, 1.5 game back of the Twins. I believe the White Sox just won, so the Indians are now in third place. In the AL Central. Of course, who cares? Everybody gets in. They're going to get a playoff spot.
I think they're tied. Maybe I'm not. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they switch places. I don't know.
But yeah, I think the White Sox on the tiebreaker. But But yeah, they have a big set of games coming up. They play the Royals twice, which who cares? That shouldn't be much of anything. But they play the Twins twice. They play the Cardinals and the Brewers. So it's not, I mean, it's a mix of unfamiliar teams and also the best team in your division. So I think this is, it's hard to say even in a short season like this, like any streak of games will define your season. But the next 2 weeks for the Indians is going to be, it's pretty huge. Like if they blow it against the Twins twice, it's going to be nearly impossible for them to win the division. If they just can't find a way to hit the Royals for some odd reason, it's going to be rough. But it'd be really nice for the Indians to just find something now and ride the pitching staff they have and hit a damn ball once in a while and actually get into the playoffs. I don't want the pity spot, Merritt. I want the Indians to win the AL Central. I missed having all that last year. I missed the hangover game. We didn't get to see one of those. That's always fun. But yeah, the next couple weeks, it's going to, if it doesn't decide the season, it's really going to shape how the last few weeks are going to feel, whether it's a rush when you're three games behind and you got to catch up to the Twins, or if they're right there even ahead of them. But just coming up, the Indians have quite a stretch they've got to do over the next couple weeks.
No, 100%. And it's just, I'm not, at this point, I'm in no way worried about the pitching staff. I mean, between the starters, Plutko's probably going to get a start somewhere in there. It would be nice if they could have one of their really good pitchers who's in Eastlake come back, but what are you going to do? They were boneheads, so we can't do that. But even going to the bullpen, I mentioned Karinchak before. I wrote about Phil Maton last week. He's been incredible. Other guys have been fine too. The bullpen is great. The fact of the matter is that they're piecing it together, and they have guys who can do all the things that I've kind of dreamed about, is, you know, throwing 95, 96 and being hard to hit, which is very nice. It's just the offense is so bad. You know, I mean, it's nice to see. It looks like Lindor might be starting to turn the corner. I know I wrote about him last week too, just him being a victim of maybe of shifts and bad luck. You know, Santana is doing, he continues to do what he does. He's not walking quite as much as he was the last few weeks, but I think he'll be fine. But again, it's after the top four, really, it is really being hard, top five, I guess. It's hard to find offense. Whether it's Domingo Santana, who's just so hit or miss, like in the most abject way of the words. It's just they need someone to start clicking to make that lineup anything even remotely impactful. You know, because like, I'm not going to sit here and say that the Twins have bad pitching, but I can't think Randy Dobnak is a 1.78 ERA guy, you know? He only strikes out five guys per nine innings. Like,
yeah, but I mean, they also have Kenta Maeda and Jose Barrios, so it's not like they're
right. No,
they're completely starved for pitching.
But I agree with you. I mean, and Maeda's good, and Barrios is pretty good, but like, these are two guys who in a head-to-head, you know, like a toe-to-toe pitcher's duel, lose to the Indians, I think. Shane Bieber is a better pitcher than any of these people. I think that if he were able to come back, Mike Clevenger is better than almost all these pitchers. At that point, we're talking about a Randy Dobnak versus like Carlos Carrasco or whoever. You know what I mean? It's just the pitching staff, like one-to-one, leans so heavily in the Indians' favor that if they could hit anything at all, because how many runs did they even give up against the Twins earlier this year? It wasn't even all that many. Like, I know they lost the series, but I don't think they got blown out. Did I think there was one blowout game? Maybe I'm gonna pull it up right now.
Yeah, I don't remember. They haven't allowed a whole lot of runs at all this season.
They were outscored 4-10, 10-4, I guess is how numbers work in sports. But still, they're 1-3 against the Twins, and they've given up 10 runs over four games. Like, that's 2.5 runs a game, Matt. If they could figure out
one of the best offenses in baseball, yeah.
Right? Exactly. And I think most of those came in one game. Like that, the one that where Max Kepler hit 100 home runs because that's what he does. But I don't know. It's just the most they scored was four runs, and that was the Clevenger game. So if they can like anything, please God, anything. It's just that is my general thought process. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that they could win all three of those series. But again, the offense has to do literally anything. I think it wasn't bad this weekend against the Tigers. They scored. Where are the numbers I need?
I mean, it was really bad on Sunday. They were good in the middle game, and that's about it. Yeah, they were good for part of the middle game. There was I think they didn't score for like five innings against the Tigers until Tristan McKenzie finally got the win. But all right, Merritt. Every Sunday, we ask everybody on Facebook, Twitter, Discord, the Let's Go Tribe, everywhere. If you have any questions for us, let us know. We have a couple this week at at Nacho Helmet on Twitter. He asked, first of all, Matt, are you using the right mic? Yes, I tested it beforehand to make sure this time. So it doesn't sound like I'm halfway across the room while Merritt is silky smooth as always. Second question, if Tito's health issues persist, do you see the team officially naming Sandy Alomar Jr. as interim manager for the remainder of the season? Oregon Buckeye from the Let's Go Tribe Discord also asked, what do you see the chances of Sandy taking over the rest of the season? So kind of the same question. But I think Tito's out again. It's the same gastrointestinal issues that he's had all season long. I mean, at this point, it's concerning for Tito, first of all. That's the most important thing, that he's not feeling good, and he came back and tried to manage through it. But, I mean, also as far as a very numbers-on-the-field thing, like at some point this is disrupting that he can't stay and manage the team. That he's here, he's not, he's here, he's not. I don't know. Is it better for the team at some point for the Indians just to say, Tito, I know you want to come back, but just stay home and stay near the toilet and stay at the hospital when you need to, and don't keep trying to come back and push yourself too hard? Because I imagine it can't be good for you to be in a dugout when you're having these issues and all this pressure. But I don't know. I don't think Sandy Alomar has been terrible by any means. If the Indians have to do it, I think it's fine as far as on the field.
I mean, at the end of the day, you know, Alomar has been there longer than Tito has, quite honestly. He's been there forever. He's been there forever. Like, goddamn. He was there for the Maniacta years, I'm pretty sure. Was he there when Eric Wedge was the manager, too?
I think so. I remember him.
I like to imagine he was. I'm just going to assume he was. I just imagine.
Definitely Maniacta, because he applied for the job when Tito.
That's right. I'm just going to assume that he's just been there. He was a catcher until one day he started showing up to work. You're like, we got to give him.
If you look at old pictures of like the 60s Indians, you'll see in the back Sandy Alomar standing there.
And yep, then, there he is, Sandy Alomar.
He's in black and white. Yeah. But when you look at him, he starts to fade in the picture because you're not supposed to look at him.
And here's the Indians team photo at the Overlook Hotel. Interesting. 1920. There's Sandy Alomar. Weird.
He looks the same exact. He's on a bike in the background. He's still riding.
What's going on there? I don't know. I mean, I have no idea what's wrong with him is the thing. I know they say gastrointestinal issues, so I don't know what the hell. That could be any one of a million things at that point. The gut is a crazy, mysterious land of guts. But the fact of the matter is, you know, they have three games against Minnesota coming up, and then they have it's a six-game road trip, but it's also the farthest possible road trip you can be on, because it's St. Louis and then Kansas City. It's, you know, it's the furthest afield the team that will travel this year. It's not the longest road trip. That's from Friday, the September 11th to Sunday, September 20th, when they're in Minnesota, Chicago, and Detroit. But that's the thing. Like, if it's just he can't travel, then why not just let him heal? Being the manager isn't – I think that Alomar has shown that it is not a super difficult in terms of making the tactical decisions, right? It's like –
I mean, especially when your starting pitcher goes six innings every game.
Right. Not... Like, let the starter go six, and then we'll go – Maton, whatever, I don't know, Karinchak, and like, I don't know, whatever. I mean, it's a blot. Here comes Dominic Leone. So,
and the Indians are also in the good position of having a bunch of clubhouse leaders, too, because everybody talks about how good I'd imagine if you needed somebody, like Tito's biggest thing, obviously, if the clubhouse was a mess, you would want him to come back just to fix it. But like, it's good. There's a bunch of leaders. Nobody's upset. So I think Sandy Alomar can just manage the ship as long as he has to.
Yeah, and I think this is – I mean, no, we've made jokes over the years about Tito's guys and how that's kind of dragged things down at times because he, you know, he'll play guys that we're like, what? You know, whatever. But those guys are also – they continue, whether on purpose or just by virtue of whatever, carrying the kind of same message that I think Francona has always pushed, and it creates that stability you mentioned within the dugout and within the clubhouse. So that's like, those are things I'm just not worried about. I'd prefer he just get healthy and whatever, figure it out. Like, I don't know what that means long term, but I don't know if it would be disruptive or not. I think it would be super cool if he shows up and then you feel sad, I guess, the next time he's not there. But Elmer's done a great job. So all things considered, I don't know. What does it mean? Like talent does all, you know, like look at Luke Walton, right? Like he went 39-1 or something like that when he was the man, when he was the head coach Warriors. And then he was trash for the Lakers and then also the Kings. So, like, it helps to have talent, I guess. And the biggest impact the manager can have is drawing the lineup. The lineup is pretty much photocopied at this point for the first six spots anyway. And then you only have a few moves you have to make for the pitching anyway. So, yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, thanks for the questions, especially the microphone. I actually did it this time, so I should check that every time now. Our last one we'll finish. This is kind of a fun one just to think about. At Nathan Clyer, he wants to know, which Indians pitcher is most likely to throw a Maddox this season? Obviously a Maddox, developed by our own Jason Lucart, who used to run Let's Go Tribe. It's a shutout and with 99 pitches or fewer, because that's what Greg Maddox did a ton because he's just so efficient. My answer is Aaron Civale. I don't think he's the best Indians pitcher, but I think if he gets on a really good game, he could do that more than anybody just because of Shane Bieber strikes too many people out. He's going to have a high pitch count. Tristan McKenzie, we just don't know what he is. And I don't think he's going to even be allowed to throw that many pitches for a while. Clevinger is too wild. But Civale, if he gets a good game and he gets a bunch of weak contact and whatever wizardry he does with the spin rate, I can see him doing it.
Obviously, that's the correct answer. I agree. Just because, like you said, the way he pitches is it naturally induces weak contact. He's looking at strikeouts and things like strikeouts to a good rate. But he pounds the zone to a degree that I don't think anyone else in the Indians does. He literally has the lowest walks per nine in all of baseball. So that helps.
I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, wow. I just noticed literally just now. So you know that helps. But yeah, I would say it's probably Civale just because of the way he pitches. I disagree. I think Bieber could pull it off as well. He almost did the other night. And didn't he? Yeah. So I think if he faces an unusually aggressive team, that's what would help. You know what I mean? Like if they are going after his curveball and they're just, you know, grounding it to second over and over and over, that could certainly help get through a few quick innings. So
yeah. And did you also know that Bieber has 100% strand rate still? He almost lost that in his last start, but he still has not. All of his runs have been on home runs. Like he's not, anybody's got on base, they've been screwed. They've been stuck.
God, he's like a pitcher. If it weren't for the fact that he wasn't 300 pounds and 6'9", he's like a pitcher that I created in a video game.
He's make the wildest proportions you can do.
Oh yeah. I make freaks of nature within 9 straight Cy Youngs. I'm like, hey, all right.
This is realistic. I'm glad I did this.
This is normal.
All right, Merritt. That's going to do it for this week. If you're listening now, iTunes, wherever, leave us a review. Let us know how you think of the podcast. If you haven't already, visit letsgotribe.com. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook. We also have a Discord now. You can find that. Actually, I don't know where you can find that. I should probably put it in our Twitter bio and stuff, but I post it once in a while on the website. If you want to know where it is, just ask in the comments, ask on Twitter, whatever. It's a nice way to talk about live Indians baseball. It's fun. It's a little different, but all right, Merritt, I'll talk to you next week.
It was a blast. Talk to you then.
meatball.
What would you do if you found out your family had a dark, secret legacy? From Misha Green and J.J. Abrams comes HBO's newest series, Lovecraft Country, a genre-bending drama that blurs the line between science fiction and reality in 1950s Jim Crow America. Starring Jonathan Majors, Journey Smollett, Courtney B. Vance, and Michael Kenneth Williams, Lovecraft Country airs Sundays at 9 p.m. on HBO and stream it on HBO Max. And listen to the Lovecraft Country Companion Podcast, hosted by Shannon Houston and Ashley C. Ford, available on all major podcast platforms.